You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
Chol-Soo Lee. Nearly 50 years ago, he was convicted of a murder in San Francisco's Chinatown. At first, the case went largely unnoticed. But as time went on, a growing number within the Asian American community began to believe the accusations against Lee just didn't add up.
I kept reading the court records and things were shouted at me.
As word spread, a movement began to grow. It took hold in Korean-American churches and on college campuses, cutting across generations and national divides, all organized around the common call to free Chol-Soo Lee.
I really want to show the people, the judge, the court system, the prison system, that we're continued and determined to fight.
Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Keith Mancone. Just heard their clips from a documentary film called Free Chol-Soo Lee. It tells the story of the movement that formed around Lee, a Korean immigrant who was arrested in 1973 for a murder that he did not commit. Lee spent 10 years in prison after that arrest, and very possibly might have spent his whole life there, if it were not for the dogged advocacy from Asian American activists who saw in his case a grave injustice, born of racism and indifference. Many of those activists went on to play leading roles in other social justice causes as well, and the movement is now seen as a seminal moment in the history of Asian American activism. So today on the program, we'll be speaking with the filmmakers behind this documentary about Chol-Soo Lee and the legacy his case has left behind. So welcoming on those filmmakers now, saying hello to the film's co-director, Julie Ha. Julie Ha, welcome to you.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
And also welcoming on its other co-director, Eugene Yee. Eugene Yee, welcome to you as well.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
And real quick, we should add that the film made its broadcast debut last month, and it's available to stream now free on the PBS YouTube channel and the PBS app. So Julie Ha, you've pointed out that this is a story that had been largely forgotten. Why was it important to you to revive it, make this a story that people were aware of again?
Well, actually, you know, the origins of this film come from a very deeply personal place. I know K.W. Lee, the journalist in the film, I've known him since I was 18 years old. He inspired me to want to become a journalist in the first place.
We'll hear more about that in a second, but he was the journalist that was largely responsible for drawing attention to some of the irregularities in the case against Lee.
Yes, exactly. He's also an influential figure in Eugene's life. And so we've known about the Chol-Soo Lee case for quite some time through KW, but it really wasn't until the funeral of Chol-Soo Lee that I think the seeds were planted to make this film. I had attended the funeral to write an obituary for a Korean American magazine I was working for at the time. I come from a print journalism background. While I was in that space, I just felt this overwhelming sense of heaviness. And to me, it felt like an emotion that went beyond people grieving for someone they had cared about and lost. Many of the people present at the funeral were the activists who had rallied to Chol-Soo's side decades earlier. They were expressing not just grief, but also regret. They felt so responsible for this other human being, and the fact that his life, even after his release, was quite difficult. And I was really struck by that depth of compassion and humanity. And then at one point, K.W. Lee, the journalist, he stood up and he was clutching this Buddhist monk's walking stick that Chol-Soo had carved for him. And he said, "Why is this story underground after all these years?" And he called the activists in this movement an endangered species. And he was basically lamenting how this landmark Asian American social justice movement, the kind of social movement this country actually has never seen before, was largely forgotten, not even taught in Asian American studies classes in this country. And he knew how hugely influential, consequential this story, this history if known today could have on people today. So fast forward 9 or 10 months later, and Eugene and I, who had worked together previously as journalists, we're brainstorming about making film together. And I spoke of the heaviness from the funeral, and we just knew that we had to excavate this history, that it was too important to allow to stay buried, and we just needed to tell it anew for new generations.
Right, and that's exactly what you managed to pull off in this film. So let's get into the story that this film tells. It goes back to 1973, well, even earlier, but let's, I suppose, talk first about how Chol-Soo Lee came to be implicated and suspected in this crime. He was a Korean-American immigrant in his early 20s. Pick up the story from there.
Yes, he was a Korean living in Chinatown, notably in San Francisco, in the early 70s. And yet police, when there was this murder in Chinatown of a Chinatown gang advisor in a busy intersection in Chinatown, they actually ended up arresting the Korean in Chinatown. Notably, Chol-Soo actually was, very well known in Chinatown as a Korean because he stood out because he was not Chinese. Police arrested him, actually based on what would turn out to be erroneous ballistics. But it set their sights on Chol-Soo Lee. And unfortunately, the system did not self-correct even after that error was revealed before the first trial. Notably, Chol-Soo was convicted by a jury, not based on material evidence, but based on the eyewitness testimony of three white tourists. They actually identified a killer who was between 5'6 and 5'10, clean shaven, and Chol-Soo Lee was a shorter man. He was not even 5'4 and had a mustache. Just based on that alone, you would think that he would have been cleared of this murder. But I think it just goes to show you what happens in our criminal justice system. And it's quite horrendous.
Yeah. And as we mentioned a little bit earlier, this case really started to get attention because of the work by journalist K.W. Lee. Became a very personal case for him as well. And we got a sense of that in this excerpted interview from your film. I want to play it right now. Here he reflects on how easily he could have fallen into a similar situation to what Chol-Soo Lee faced himself.
I was lucky. He was not lucky. There are an awful lot of unlucky people, especially Asians. They have no language. They couldn't tell the story. The institutions, the media, and the law enforcement, the judicial system have continued to remain ignorant and insensitive. And that's why I felt, it was my calling to make some small dent in that war of ignorance and insensitivity.
Ignorance and insensitivity, those are themes that are explored throughout this film and how that played into this wrongful conviction, the investigation, the prosecution. And those themes also really a lot of what resonated with those who became involved in this case. So let's continue the story of Chol-Soo Lee's case and how more people became aware of it and why so many decided to get involved.
Yeah, it was really the articles that K.W. Lee wrote following a 6-month investigation of this case and covering the truth. Those articles actually really, I think, humanized Chol-Soo's struggles in this country after immigrating at age 12 and just being caught up so quickly into this school to prison pipeline. It also uncovered just how unjust the conviction was and actually a case that was not based on evidence. And I think also what we realized was those articles and I think helped people, especially Asian Americans, as the articles were sort of copied and passed around in the community, they could look at Chol Soo Lee and say, that could be my brother. That could be my son. That could be my grandson. That could be me. And that's when you see the incredible work and power of journalism. And somebody like K.W. Lee, who was actually a Korean immigrant himself, could bring to the stories to just humanize the plight of Chol Soo Lee.
All right, we're going to dig more into that work in just one second. Real quick, for anybody just joining us, this is KCBS In Depth. I'm Keith Manconi. Today, we're talking about the film Free Chol Soo Lee, which examines the life and legacy of a man who inspired a movement that helped shape the Asian American identity. Joining us for that conversation, we're speaking with the film's co-directors, Julie Ha and Eugene Yee. And now we're going to invite on Gail Wong, who was featured in the film and once served as a member of the Bay Area Chol Soo Lee Defense Committee. Gail Wong, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So we're talking right now about how this movement formed. You were a part of that movement. Maybe you could shed a little bit more light on why the story of Chol Soo Lee resonated with you and many others.
So Julie talked about K.W. Lee, and you've seen him on the film. He's a very powerful speaker and a powerful writer. And a bunch of young Koreans, we got together, and K.W. came to a class at San Francisco State, and he talked about this case, and he also passed out the article that he wrote, Alice in Chinatown. And we were all just so deeply moved by the horrors of this story. And I think we could all relate and identify with the racism, with the way that he was treated. We all have within us experiences like Chol Soo, whether it was in school, working in our workplace. And so we said, we've got to do something. And so we formed a defense committee in line with, there was a Sacramento defense committee that had already been formed. So we formed our Bay Area chapter.
And just to dig a little bit more into the facts of this investigation that were so enraging to many folks, Julie Ha or Eugene Yee, explain a little bit more. So there was the fact that the case relied on Caucasian witnesses who were standing far away and missed key facts about the individuals involved. There was the fact that they were not really discriminating between people of Chinese ancestry versus Korean ancestry. What else would you want to explain about why this was seen as so outrageous?
Yeah, it the arresting police officer, as you see in our film, who arrested Chol Soo Lee during that murder trial, he identified from the stand Chol Soo as Chinese. And Chol Soo's own defense attorney did not even correct that for the record. So I think you see just when you're a poor immigrant from a community that actually didn't have much political power at that time, he was all alone. And even his own court-appointed defense attorney was not giving a spirited defense in a case where, you know, K.W. Lee always talked about how obvious it was that this was unjust, that this conviction was not based on facts. And, you know, I think you could also speak to the issue of cross-racial identification, which actually came, you know, later in the retrial of this murder case. But that's, you know, another thing, these three white tourists who saw the killer for mere seconds from like maybe 45 feet away. And again, though, if you know, as I mentioned earlier, their eyewitness descriptions initially to police, if you read those records, is of a person who is much taller. And so just even by that description alone, and if you see Chol Soo Lee yourself, you'll notice that he's shorter in stature. And again, just, yeah, the kind of assumption, they're all Oriental, you know, and so even though he wasn't even Chinese, he was Korean, you know, didn't seem to matter. We remember also KW telling us that when he would go and do reporting and all the investigation in this case, he would talk to people in Chinatown And it was actually pretty well known among the people who, you know, lived in Chinatown that the Cholsu Lee was not the killer. And in fact, people knew who the real killer was. He even had a nickname that people called after the murder, which was killer. And so it just sort of goes to show, you know, how people in our society who are poor and don't have the resources or support network, they can be just swallowed up in the criminal justice system like this.
Right. And you tell the story of how Cholsu Lee largely was chewed and swallowed up as well. I mean, eventually he is exonerated after 10 years in jail, but that doesn't mean that he necessarily had a happy end to his story. He went on to struggle with drug addiction, bouncing from job to job. And just to give a sense of the enormity of this movement that built up around him, I want to play another clip. He reflected on that in his writings, some of which you included in your film. Here's an excerpt from that film. So this is going to be the words of Lee read by a voice actor.
Many times I ask myself, why are so many people, total strangers to me, working so hard to get me out of prison? And that kind of boggled my mind. I didn't know why they did it. I was just a prisoner, and something like that never happened in my life. I took the support in a very personal way, and I would not understand until many years later the enormity of what I had become in the eyes of these people. I had become a cause, a symbol.
So on the one hand, he expresses a lot of gratitude for the support that he received, but on the other, it came with a lot of expectations for perhaps the leader that he could become, perhaps a civil rights figure that many saw in him. And for somebody that had experienced a lot of trauma in his life and had spent so much time in jail, readjusting back to life out in the world was very crushing.
It was, and you're right to mention
Eugene Yee.
You know, some of those expectations from the community as well, because he struggled with that as well. He just wanted so badly to pay back. I mean, this gift of freedom that he'd been given by this incredible work that these amazing people had done on his behalf. But you know, we've spoken of this in other spaces as well. You know, at the time, there really was not a reentry program. That term, as one of our participants and interviewees, Jeff Adachi, the former elected public defender of San Francisco, shared with us. Yeah, reentry was not a term back then. And so the activists did heroic work in trying to ad hoc sort of like smooth his transition back to life on the outside. But you know, as another one of the activists, David Kakashiba, shared with us, you know, Cholsu was on the higher end of need, is how David Kakashiba put it. And David Kakashiba has, you know, he has, since the movement days, you know, he works with younger people, and so now sort of has the experience to kind of see what Cholsu was struggling with at the time. But it really is important to just kind of, well, one, emphasize that the activists worked so hard. But two, I mean, there was just so much that Cholsu was struggling with. I mean, today's language, we refer to it as institutionalization from his 10 years in prison. But of course, that leading to his addiction that you mentioned, and compounding all the trauma that he'd been struggling with before, it really set him on a very difficult path once he was out.
Yeah, and I think that institutionalization story resonates with a lot of folks that are concerned with the effects of the criminal justice system. We're going to talk more about this in just one second. Real quick, once again, reminding folks that this is KCBS In Depth, your weekly deep dive into the events and trends shaping life in the Bay Area and beyond. I'm Keith Manconi. Today, we're talking with the filmmakers behind the documentary film Free Cholsu Lee, which has resurfaced the story of a wrongful conviction from the 1970s, along with the grassroots movement led by Asian American activists, to set it right. Speaking with the film's co-directors, Julie Ha and Eugene Yee, also speaking with Gail Wong, who was featured in the film and once served as a member of the Bay Area Cholsu Lee Defense Committee. So, Gail Wong, bringing things back to you, reflect a little bit, if you could, on the lasting legacy of that movement, because as we've been discussing all along, it was much bigger than Cholsu Lee, and in a lot of ways, we can still feel those reverberations today.
I think that the film says it all. And a takeaway message is that change is possible. When we see what's going on in our society today, some of the anti-Asian hate that's going on, the power of the mass movement, that's what brought the Cholsu to freedom, is that people from all over the country, actually all over the world, there was support committees in Korea who came together, raised money, hired some of the best legal defense team, and made this change possible. So the power, I can't emphasize more the power of this mass movement to create this change. And I think when young people see the older generation now who were involved, and that we actually did this, it will give a lot of inspiration. And when I have spoken at panels, young people will come up and say, tell us, what did you do? What can we learn from you? We need to learn, because we don't see these kinds of models. This is our history, and it's finally come to light.
Yeah, and you yourself have been an activist and doing a lot of work in education in Oakland, breaking across racial, cultural lines. So carrying on that legacy yourself as well. Julie Han, Eugene Yee, what are you hoping that modern day activists might take away from your film?
I think, one thing to remember about when this movement happened is that this idea of Asian America was still a relatively new invention. And so it really wasn't expected that the Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Filipino, that people with that shared Asian American, what we now call Asian American heritage, would come together like this. But that's, as we've talked about, part of what makes this moment so incredible. Like, they did. And people like Gail sort of helped carve out the idea of what an Asian America could be, just this very active, loud, vocal, and politically engaged group. And so, by reaching across these lines of national origin, these lines of generation, these lines of like language and so many other differences that different Asians have, there's almost this idea of solidarity that is so central to the idea of being Asian American. It's not just a demographic category. There's that sewn into the idea of it. And so I think looking ahead, where can that idea of solidarity go? It was a very unlikely solidarity that brought these Asian Americans together to find common cause with Cholsu Lee. So what are the common causes that we can find today? And where are those other solidarities that we might be able to find with other communities that we might not expect so much? That's certainly something that's stayed with me from the example that these activists have set from this amazing work they did all those years ago.
And I think it's important, for audiences to personalize the message of this story in their own lives. And I'll tell you what's always moved me about this story is that here, Cholsu Lee, somebody who basically was being told by society that you're disposable. And then a group of people like Gail and others looked at Cholsu Lee and said, no, you are worthy of our time, attention, love, and care. We will build a movement that this country has never, the likes of which this country has never seen before, and we'll build a landmark movement in your name to free you. And they succeed in overturning two murder convictions, which any lawyer will tell you is almost impossible in our American criminal justice system, but they did it. And I think, we have to note that even before this wrongful conviction, Cholsu Lee was not a model minority. He was not some undergrad at Berkeley. Mm. He was this poor Korean immigrant street kid. And so we hope that people will see, like, who are the other Cholsu Lees now, today? And we actually think that's a message that Cholsu Lee himself wanted to spread. If you look at the last chapter of his life, what he was doing was talking publicly about the movement that rallied around him, even though it was a terrible burden for him to live up to their expectations, even though that weighed on him and he struggled because of it, he still knew that his life was touched by some of the most amazing, compassionate human beings on this planet. And what they built together, what they did together, was something that needed to be emulated today, and could inspire, you know, new generations of activists, journalists, just conscientious people, you know, working toward the public good and helping their fellow a human being. And so, you know, we hope that we are actually helping to deliver Cholsu's message himself by excavating this history and sharing not only his struggle, but also this incredible movement that was built by Asian Americans.
Yeah, and well, I think your film does indeed shed a lot of light on that movement. We only have a minute or so left, and want to give the closing thought to Gail Wong. Once again, was an advocate who played a role in a lot of the events described in this film. And, you know, when you're talking about a historic movement for change, many decades later, you kind of have to stand up, look around, and ask, well, how much of that change really did happen, and how much is left to be done still? So I guess I'll let that be the closing question to you, Gail Wong. What do you think still needs to be done?
There is still a lot of work to be done. I think one thing that has changed is that we do have this history that's been brought to light. Thank you to Eugene and Julie. And that's very powerful. That is very, very powerful to see that we've got to continue to organize when we see these the anti-Asian hate, when we see any kind of discrimination, we see racism within our institutions, we need to come together and fight. And there are people now who lived through this, learned lessons, can pass on the lessons to young people to continue the struggle.
All right. And that's a great point to close this all out on. We're going to thank all of our guests right now, right before we close out. The film's co-directors, once again, were Julie Ha and Eugene Yi. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And we just heard a second ago from Gail Wong, who was featured in the film, once served as a member of the Bay Area Cholsu Lee Defense Committee. Gail Wong, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
The film Free Cholsu Lee made its broadcast debut last month. It's available to stream now on the PBS YouTube channel and on the PBS app. Thank you all for listening for KCBS and In Depth. I'm Keith Menconi. Stay safe, be well. We'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.